Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump Podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
My name is Peter.
And my name is Ashton.
Guys, Fimble Winter is here.
Yeah.
It's very cold, so make sure you wrap up warm and look out for four.
What?
Look out for what?
Go look out for four.
For what?
For four.
For what?
For four.
For what?
With the hammer. For four. You've got to look out for four.
Look out for four.
Look out, he's here.
I was so confused.
He's really cross. He's so cross.
Four is
Freya's more cross.
True, but who will be most cross? Find out in God of War Ragnarok, available right now on PlayStation. It's a big week for video games.
It is.
It's been
a big flipping release window as well. We've got loads to talk about. I had regular plops last week. We were worried that we wouldn't have Ashton here this week because of plops.
Mm.
And Peter, you were off with holiday plops the week before.
I was,
so
yeah.
we were threatened with not having our regular lineup for 3 weeks. But fortunately, we're all here. There's so much to talk about. So many video games have come out. Are you guys excited? Are you guys ready?
Well, and yet, yes. We should say that at time of recording, Ashton has actually played a little bit of
about 45
of GOW,
minutes.
God of War.
Yes.
But we've not actually played it because we're recording this a little bit early. Because of holiday plots.
And PlayStation and really don't like to send us anything.
No. PlayStation hate us.
They don't really like us at all. I don't know what we've done wrong.
Won't be able to give you any sort of chatter or first impressions on that. Well, I suppose Ashton might.
Ashton can give her very, very first impressions.
A little sign.
You've probably seen or heard the Quipscope that went out on the channel already by this point. Mm. So we'll just go watch that. Just go watch that. Each and every week, we're sponsored by a very real video game adjacent sponsor. It helps us keep the lights on here over at Team Triple Jump. Can you see him?
No, he's not there. Maybe he's hibernating.
Could be. Dead maybe he knows Fimblewinter is here. Yeah. Dead Island 2 the Spider does not appear to be
he's scared of four.
Can't see him
with
anywhere.
His presence today, he has forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We are recording, as you said, a little earlier, so it could be that he just got he didn't get the message.
Oh, yeah.
It's Wednesday today.
Thursday morning, I need to be there, and we're not going to be there Thursday morning to record.
No Dead Island 2 and the Spider, but we do have a sponsor. Ashton's going to read it for you right now.
We do. I have some questions for you too.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to start a band, what would your aesthetic be? Would you perhaps be a traditional boy band, or would you go down the Kiss route and paint your face?
Hey, look at us. We'd be cute boys next door, I think.
That's true. And hey, what's another word for a guitar?
Axe.
A strat. Oh, an axe. Yeah.
Axe. Well, because of these two very common things that happen, not only in the real life in bands, but also in video games, such as their new one that came out today at time of recording, coming very soon, God of War, Ragnar Rock and Roll.
Ragnar Rock and Roll.
What do you do in it?
It's like Guitar Hero, but also with gods and baddies.
Okay.
You use your axe.
Yeah, use your axe. Yeah. Both the guitar kind and the slicey kind.
The slicey kind.
Yeah, you and your son just sing songs.
It's like a family band.
Yeah, yeah.
Got to get a son. Clearly.
You're only allowed to play it if you have a son.
Mm. Son. Oh, that's really exciting. And it's out now?
Nope. Because it's not real.
Oh, for God's sake.
You got us good.
For God's sake.
I godded you good.
Mm.
Goodness me. No, we're not sponsored by God of War Ragnarok and Roll. Mm. We are sponsored by wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/teamtriplejump, where for as little as $1 per month, you can submit questions to this podcast. We've got other tiers available, loads of fantastic rewards and awards. Awards? Maybe. I don't know. Well,
awards.
You will be able to vote in our Game of the Year awards towards the end of the year. if you're a patron. That is something that we will be rolling out towards the end of next month. So make sure you sign up now. Patreon.com/TeamTripleJump. We would love you. We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks.
We've got a first question there, Peter.
Yep. It's from Chris Adds.
Does he subtract?
No. Or multiply?
No, he adds. And that's all he does. Okay. And he does not use ad blocker. He watches them all. He doesn't even skip.
No.
No.
Thanks, Chris.
Chris is a hero.
Hi, Bap. I teach games development at college, but only the animation side of things because I know nothing about coding. Don't tell my boss, please. If given the opportunity, what area would you feel confident in teaching as part of a games development curriculum? What topics would fill you, and what topics would fill you with dread? Stay sexy, Chris adds.
Thanks, Chris. What does Chris add?
Very good. Stay sexy, Chris adds.
He's keys.
I would like to immediately jump in and say, I don't think anything would fill me with confidence in teaching at college level.
No.
In the world of video games development. But if the question was more, if you had to, what would you try and wing your way through? Then I think definitely I'd lean more towards some kind of the creative aspect. I'd try and pretend that I knew how to write a narrative, which I don't. I couldn't even pretend to be an artist and like do concept art and stuff because no. So I suppose the only thing that almost... Well, from what I can think of, the only thing that doesn't require technical know-how is probably story development, right? Can you think of anything else that where you don't have to be...
QA?
Yeah,
QA.
Or like
I suppose you've got an actual...
I have some experience in QA.
Or like the teaching about the consumer and all that, the marketing side of like...
HR.
I couldn't teach about HR.
You could do the catering.
Yeah. Could order in the Domino's for when it's crunch month.
Yes.
Yeah. Yum, yum.
No family for you.
And what would fill me with dread? Well, I did actually study a little bit of computer science for a year, and I did some coding. I think it was mostly Java, which I don't think would necessarily enter into a lot of games development. But anyway, I did a bit of Java, and wow, didn't really enjoy it very much. It's not that I was even that bad at it, but I just thought, not for me. There were all these other guys in my, it was almost exclusively guys, it was 98% male, that class. They were all like, or some of them were really into it and like, oh, look at this little workaround. I've imported this library from, I was like, I don't even know what that means. What are you importing libraries for? And they were doing all sorts of like clever things. And I was like, I'm just doing it the way the teacher told us to. And that would be the extent of my coding ability, is like just doing it really conventionally and not being remotely kind of cutting edge or doing anything useful for the company, I don't think. So that would fill me with dread.
If I had to teach like a one-off lesson, if they were like, can you please come in and teach a one-off lesson to the students? My lesson would be called How to Make a Good Female Character and Not Flip It Up.
Okay.
Would be the name of the lesson, because that's important. Because I imagine, not to stereotype here, but I imagine game development classrooms are filled with quite a lot of boys. And I think it would be good for them to know, hey, maybe don't put your badass female character in a bikini. Maybe she doesn't need to be in that.
No.
Hey, how
maybe
about
she
we
need some armor?
Turn down the jiggle physics because she's just standing still.
Sounds to me like you're just going to ruin all games.
That's true.
That's what it sounds like to me.
Hey, how about you give her a mustache?
Yeah.
Why does Aloy have a beard?
Why does she have a beard?
Why isn't she in a bikini with the jiggle physics slider turned up to 11?
Yeah.
Come on.
Why can't I adjust her breath size?
Her breath size. Her breath.
Worst game ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what I would teach specifically. And in terms of what I would be terrified to actually teach, anything to do with game development at all, really. If you put me in front of a class and said, today we're teaching insert topic here, I would say, ooh, bad news, don't know anything about that. And I don't know, just probably show them some YouTube videos. I'm like, you guys want to watch TikTok for a bit instead? And then when the teacher comes back, I'd be like, so yes, that is all you need to know about the world of insert topic here.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming, and I'll see you next week. Make sure you do that homework I told you about.
Do it.
Brian. Yep.
Brian. It's always
Make
Brian.
Make sure you do it.
Cheeky Brian.
And then they'd leave, and all they did watch was my For You page, which is just full of all kinds of weird stuff.
Nice.
That's what I would show them.
Excellent. I would be terrified of having to do anything pertaining to art, any kind of concept art.
Yeah.
I think it would become pretty clear pretty quick that I don't know a damn thing that I'm talking about and have no... natural ability whatsoever. If I were to teach a class, it would either be, because I did some QA a little bit for like 6 months, but I can't really remember a great deal about the due processes that were involved. They were quite intense. There were daily meetings, daily testings to be done. But certainly I feel like I could provide a guiding hand maybe in the broad topic of quality control. Maybe mock reviews, which companies do facilitate in order to work out what they think a game is going to review like. You know, they do have play tests where people internally have to decide, is this actually fun? Because if you're, for example, a coder and you're working on this game every day, you don't usually get the opportunity to take a step out of that and actually play the game and decide whether or not, hey, this is really good. Just because it's not part of your job, you're just told this is what you need to do. This is what you need to do. So these roles do exist, and I would maybe be able to offer some guidance there. Perhaps maybe talk to some of these developers and just give them a kind of not home economics course, but almost sort of an outside of a gaming work employment. Maybe some insight there in that. The games industry is a highly volatile workplace, and there's a good chance that you won't be employed anywhere for very long. Companies either get closed down, projects end, contracts get terminated, you may not be working there full time. Maybe just sort of talk to these people and stamp on their dreams just a little bit.
Just so they know going.
Just like some mild dream crushing, just so that they're aware that, hey, maybe you shouldn't buy a place. Maybe you should rent just in case. How long is your contract? 6 months? Maybe you shouldn't buy a home here just yet, because there's a good chance that you could end up working all around the world. And as exciting as that is, that's just the nature of the biz, baby. And it's something that people who have been working in it have been campaigning against for a long time. Perhaps a little bit more stability, but that is just how the games industry works. And a lot of people end up not in, what's the right term for it? Should we say safe employment?
Yeah.
What's his name? Justin Schreier wrote a couple of fantastic books all about this kind of stuff, interviewing people who worked at studios and the general stress that goes into working there. So yeah, maybe that's what I'd do. I'd teach a course on just sort of like mild dream stamping.
Yeah.
Just you're passionate about this, but maybe like consider accounting.
Ben Potter's Dream Crushing 101.
Maybe something like that.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of stamp out the fire in
what's
your heart.
What's that? Mm-hmm. You have hopes and dreams.
You excited about this?
Put them in the bin.
What? Stop it. There's a good chance that you won't have this job next year. Not because you're not good enough, but because the games industry, it eats people
it's
up.
It's brutal.
It is brutal. So.
Yeah.
You haven't got the stomach for it, Brian. You simply don't.
Oh, poor Brian.
It's always Brian, isn't it? But I do feel like the four of us... Billy included, could walk into any college in the world and successfully teach someone how to be a game designer.
Yeah.
For sure. Easy. Prove it.
Become a game designer. Nice and easy.
Yeah.
We probably could do that. You know, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
We should try that one. Put that down on the list.
Yeah. Okay.
It's time for something.
Yeah.
Have we done it before?
No.
No.
Is it exciting?
Yes.
What's it called?
What we play in.
It's what we play in time. Time to talk about the video games that we've been playing. Peter, what have you been playing?
I've been playing The Game of Life, moving my house. We're recording slightly earlier than normal, and so there's been even less time for me since the last podcast to even start settling down and doing things. What I did do when I moved in, because we required means of at least playing, like, DVDs and stuff, because we didn't have any internet was the problem, and we don't have an aerial, so we can't watch terrestrial TV. So I got the first console I could find, and the PS4 was at the top of the box. So I got the PS4 out, and I hooked that up the TV, and we've been watching stuff on there. And so I've been able to play the games that are installed on there. I haven't actually done that, because what I've done instead is do the same thing on my PC. So I have played a bit of Orcs Must Die this week, Orcs Must Die 3, and that was kind of it. I've just done that because I've not been able to download any new games. I didn't have the PS5 out, which had the games that I have been playing installed on it. And so not much is the answer. I'm hoping that I might have played bit of God of War by the time the next podcast starts or is recorded. So, yeah, I received a router today.
That's exciting.
That's great news. So should have internet by tomorrow. So that is my exciting contribution to what we're playing, I'm afraid. Just a bit of a PC game that was already installed on the machine.
Nice.
Ashton.
Stuff.
I've been a bit under the weather this week.
Yes, yeah.
And I've also been a bit stuck at my parents' house because driving when you're sick, it's really hard. But I've played, before I went to my parents' house, a little bit of Marvel's Ultimate Alliance 2
with
MB, because he really liked the first one and he really wanted to play the second one. And then we spent a good amount of time confused as to why one controller made both characters jump. Turns out it's just a weird Steam error. But yeah, we played some of that, and it's interesting. There's definitely a lot going on pretty much all the time. But hey, we had a good fun, and maybe we'll play again sometime soon.
Who did you play as?
Well, at the beginning, we had like the four characters. There was Iron Man, Captain America, Spider-Man, and Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
And I played mainly as Spider-Man. Mm. And then as soon as we were given free reign, I played as Storm. She's OP as hell. The lightning attack just ruins everyone's day. It's great. So I pretty much just played as her, and then we had an all-gal squad. We had her, Ms. Marvel, Scion?
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. And the Invisible Woman.
Mm. Lovely.
Also, for some reason when I'm sick, I really like playing games that make me annoyed. So I played Planet Coaster. Man, I suck at making roller coasters in that game. I'm really good at making parks. Second it says make a coaster, rubbish. Mm. Terrible. The one I'm currently on asked me to make three separate roller coasters. One of them I managed to just get one of the pre-built ones, worked fine. But then the next two that it wants me to make, I just can't do it. They're always too scary.
You make people sick, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, but then like most of the time I don't even understand why, because they'll be like totally fine with like three loop-de-loops in a row, and then they'll go on a straight bit and they're like, and I'm like, why? Why? Why?
They've just done three loop-de-loops.
But on their loop-de-loops, they're only a 3 out of 10.
Yeah, man.
Or 3 out of 20. And then they get to 12 and then it's, oh, I'm too sick. Can't
ride. Is
that
it? Is it because you're sick? You want to make everyone else sick?
Maybe.
So,
yeah.
That could be it, yeah.
But I really try not to make them bad. And I'm playing them on a PlayStation as well. So you've got to do it with a controller, which my boyfriend said he absolutely would not be able to do, which isn't too hard, but making a roller coaster in the game is kind of difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So.
One day you'll make a roller coaster that everyone enjoys.
Yeah, one day. That's the dream.
Mm.
So.
You played a tiny bit of Ragnarok.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Just played some of that. It looks good. A couple of weird, not issues, but I noticed that some of the like mouth moving for Atreus and one of the other characters is a bit weird.
But you did play day one unpatched.
But I played it patched.
Oh, you played it patched? I thought you were going to not play
Well,
patched,
it just installed it.
It just patched it.
So it didn't take very long. It was like 10 minutes afterwards. Right. So yeah, I played patched. But yeah, a couple of the mouth movements seem a bit like when they're talking,
right,
rather than being like, Kratos's look fine, but for some reason Atreus's are a little bit weird.
Okay.
But maybe that's just...
4 out of 10 then.
4 out of 10.
4 out of 10.
Yeah, 4.
Oh, yeah, 4.
Maybe that's just like me getting used to it again. But yeah, looks good so far. I'm excited to carry on playing it.
Nice.
Mm. Very nice. I have a fair few things to talk about. I finished off The Last of Us Part 1.
Oh, yeah.
And I've got to say, the ending hit a lot harder this time around. And mm-hmm. I don't know if it's because I was poorly or if it was because it looks a lot better now, so the facial animations are really good, or if it's also because I have the hindsight of the second game and everything that comes there and what all this is building to. But I enjoyed it. You know, it's still a fantastic game. I couldn't really be bothered to play Left Behind as well because this was a copy that I was borrowing from someone else. I was just, once I finished that, I was done. I couldn't be bothered to play anymore.
Really. I never got around to Left Behind the first time, so I probably will.
Left Behind is fantastic.
I have heard very good things about it, yeah.
I was just ready to move on to the next game,
yeah.
Slash finish the next game. I played a tiny bit of Dark Souls with friend of the channel, Emma Lishan.
Mm.
That video is on her channel now. Barbara went in there and helped her out with Ornstein and Smog in Smog in Anne Orlando. And from what I understand, the gatekeepers were out in force
because
she summoned assistance for what is meant to be a notoriously hard boss fight. And I must say, that boss fight is a piece of cake. it's an absolute piece of cake in hindsight.
Mm.
Because I haven't played that boss fight for a long time, and the speed and the complexity with which From Software design their boss fights now makes those two look like a pair of chumps. I've got to say, their moves are they're highly telegraphed. You can strafe around them. You can easily roll out of the way of attacks. I'm confident that Emma would have smashed that boss fight regardless of whether or not she had help.
Mm.
But do go on that video and leave a really nice comment, because from what I understand, people were being total arseholes.
Well, if nothing else, it's just a nice bit of cross, what's the word? Collaboration.
Bit of collaboration.
Just like, hey, come and play a game on my channel. Doesn't have to
collaboration. And also, that game has co-op in it.
Yeah.
And people get really so hung up.
If you don't want to play a game in co-op, don't. But if you don't want people to play your game in co-op, don't make a co-op.
Soulsborne fans are the worst. They really are. They do not want you to have any fun with it. Go watch that video. It's on Emolition's channel now. I also played Modern Warfare 2, the new one. I played through the story, the campaign of that.
You finished it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Amsterdam looks well pretty, isn't it?
Yeah, it does. Good,
it looks
it?
Really good. Mm. I really enjoyed that game. It had a lot of strange new mechanics that they were trying out. Like, you could respond on the D-pad with dialogue options occasionally. It only happened a few times. And sometimes it would want me to do a specific thing, then I would die. And then on the loading screen to play again, it would explain how to do that section. It was like, brilliant. Could have really used that information a minute ago.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't looking for a challenge, so I put it on one of the easier difficulties because I want to feel like a flipping war hero. And we do often get asked on this podcast what are our gaming guilty pleasures. And I got to say, Call of Duty campaigns, I flipping love them.
Mm.
They're just, I know it's sort of like military fetishism at its finest. Mm. Like, yeah, let's go save the world and kill all the baddies. But there's something about it that really appeals to me. And I don't know if it's just because the original Modern Warfare was such a formative game for me at the time that I still really enjoy those. So I liked it. I liked it a lot. I think the review score was 6 that IGN gave it. Can't say I agree with that. I think it was a fun romp.
Better than Vanguard, for sure.
Better than Vanguard, yeah, 100%. I then finished off playing through Guardians of the Galaxy on PS4 because I didn't have my PS5 for a little bit, and I played that and got the platinum in it.
Nice.
So now I have the platinum in both the PS5 and the PS4.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, I was meaning to play through that game again soon anyway, and I still really like Guardians of the Galaxy. I think it's great. I then, for similar reasons, but not for the trophies, played through New Tales from the Borderlands on PS5 just to finish that, because I played the first chapter on that and then I played the rest on the PS4 version. So I finished that one off. And finally, because of the Modern Warfare 2 stuff, I thought, wow, I could really go for another Call of Duty campaign right now. And I haven't played Advanced Warfare. Mm. So I put the disc in and I played through that. And yes, it does have Kevin Spacey in it. And that is highly regrettable. And it also wasn't a very good campaign. It's got Troy Baker in it.
Oh.
And he looks
what
like...
game doesn't?
And he looks like Troy Baker as well. Thanks. It's really jarring.
Oh, really?
In the cutscene, I heard him talk. I was like, that's just Troy Baker.
It's Troy.
And then in the cutscene,
Troy
Baker. I'm like, this is really taking me out of the experience, man. That's just Troy Baker. I think it is definitely one of the weaker campaigns, though. Spacey notwithstanding and his terribleness. So,
have you played any of the online?
For Advanced Warfare or Modern Warfare 2?
Modern Warfare 2.
No, I haven't. I just played the single player. But I'm looking forward to Warzone 2.0 releasing next weekend.
Mm.
I'll jump into that and give that a go with some friends. That is everything I played. Tried to route through it as fast as I can.
You played enough for the three of us there.
Yeah, I played a lot.
Thanks for
I forgot. I also played some Saints Row last night.
Yeah.
Is that still going well?
That game sucks. I love it. My boyfriend keeps telling me it's your favorite game, isn't it? I love playing it so much. Yeah, and what? All right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. It's great.
It is. Question 2 comes from Sputnik. I'm going to prepare for me to say the word million lots of times.
Okay.
Nintendo have realised the latest quarter... sorry.
I have to get through the word quarters first.
Or released would be
It does say realized. Nintendo have realized there.
Oh, yeah. Also the wrong there.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's okay.
Nintendo have released their latest quarter's financials and sales figures. And for the first time, they're lowering sales forecasts for the Switch down to 19 million for the current financial year from 21 million. With total sales 114.3 million units, currently over 3 million units selling every quarter, and probably at least 4 years until a replacement is released, it looks like the Switch will get close to the PlayStation 2's all-time sales record of 155 million units. Do you think the Switch will be a worthy successor to the PlayStation 2 on its accomplishment? Given its success, where do you think Nintendo goes from here?
Thank you, Sputnik.
Thank you, Sputnik.
I think we may have been asked before where Nintendo should go next. Mm. And I kind of struggled because I don't know. Like, the thing with Nintendo is they do always seem to do just something a bit unique and different. You know, you can rely on Xbox and PlayStation to just release a kind of predictable model, but just with better tech. You know, you know what it's going to be able to do, roughly speaking. Whereas, you know, Nintendo come along and they say, hey, here's this hybrid portable home console with detachable Joy-Cons, and it's got motion controls and does all these things. And, you know, you go back to previous generations and you look at the Wii, that's kind of out there as well, the 3DS. It's all a bit strange. So I find it very difficult to predict what Nintendo are ever going to do next. But I think whatever it is, it will be a bit weird again, in the same way that the Switch is also kind of a bit weird. But do I think it's a worthy successor to the PS2's accomplishment? Yes, I think it is in a couple of ways. Firstly, the PS2 also has a giant library of games, and so does the Switch. Mm. And I think the Switch... So I've got a list coming out. It may have come out this week, actually, on the biggest video game libraries of all time. And the Switch was way higher than I expected. It's like top three. It may have even been at the top of the list. I don't know. Mm. But because there's a lot of kind of easy to download guff, like, you know, just kind of digital
like the
only.
The Steam library was just full of just random stuff.
Exactly. So because of that, you know, you can at least say like, well, it, you know, it kind of trumps the PS2 in that sense as well. And also it just seems to be one of those consoles. They don't come round even every generation necessarily, but just one of those consoles where everyone kind of has one. And I guess that's, you know, that's shown by the stats that we're talking about here. But everyone, it's just, it has that kind of familiarity to it. Like, most people just had a PS2. Everyone had a Wii, you know, and if you didn't, you knew about a dozen people who did. And you played the Wii all the time. And the Switch is another one of those. Like, I know loads of people who've got a Switch. I knew loads of people who had a Wii. But I didn't know necessarily a notably large amount of people who had, say, a GameCube or, like, a Series S. Or, I don't know, there's just something about certain models where it just seems very familiar, very accessible, very appealing, I guess, to a wide portion of the audience. And so... that, I suppose, is why it is selling so well. And I think that's something the PS2 did at the time. So hats off to the Switch for managing to just find its way into that niche. I don't know exactly what the exact, you know, the magic words are and all the criteria that get you in there, but it seems to have done it as far as I'm concerned. So
I think you're right with the, like, wide range of people it applies to. A lot with the, like, with the Wii, it's a family console.
Yeah.
Like, you can play it with your fam. So the parents are more inclined to necessarily get one for the kids over what they might, you know, PlayStation 5, partly due to the price and also partly due to the fact that, you know, there's a lot more on a Switch or what was the Wii than a PlayStation 5 for the whole family to enjoy. Mm. Which I think is why it's done so well. Like you say, most people own one. I don't know if anyone at the office doesn't own a Switch. I think most of the people in our team do.
I have a shared custody of a Switch.
Yeah.
Peter and I share a Switch.
Yeah.
Oh, you swear? Oh, that's cute.
Which I never really played. But
yeah, Peter's not allowed it.
But no. I could, if I wanted to, I could ask.
After
Mum says
outburst,
it's my turn with the Switch.
In public that time.
Yeah,
he's not allowed.
Yeah. What was I saying?
Most of the people in the office have a Switch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ashton's got poorly brain fog.
Yeah. Can you go? I don't know what I was going to
say. Yeah, that's absolutely fine. I can take over. I slightly misinterpreted the question. I do think it's a worthy successor for the same reason that you guys do. I looked at this question a bit more from the aspect of, will it reach the 155 million units of the PS2? And yes, I think it probably will. Mm. Unless tying into the further question about where Nintendo goes from here, they suddenly release a brand new unit and discontinue the old one, which is not going to happen. The Switch is going to continue to sell regardless of whether or not they release a new one. I would be curious, though, when they do release a new one, which, as we've discussed before, we're all agreed pretty much they're on the right track here. It just needs to be a lot more powerful. If they do release a new one, will it be backwards compatible? Will there be an element of the current cross-gen situation we're hearing, we're seeing on Xbox and PlayStation at the moment, where games released for the new Switch have to be compatible with the old Switch as well? And then will they end up kind of backing themselves into a corner on that front? There has been some news recently about some developers who are getting a bit frustrated about having to develop Series X games that have to be compatible with the Series S, even not even the original Xbox, but the Series S. They're struggling to make it work on that. So will Nintendo face a similar issue if they go down that route? I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, I think that the Switch is a fantastic system. They really just hit upon something that's so universally appealing. And I don't see why, with the right software support, which it's gonna get from Nintendo's first party stable, why it wouldn't hit 155 and go further. I think it's long overdue for a console to overtake the PS2. And as important as we all agree, as important as the PS2 is, I feel like now the Switch is a far more relevant system, perhaps even than the PS2 was at the time. Maybe. Is that too big of a thing to say? Because it encompasses so many different, you know, handheld.
It's debatable, but there's an argument for it as much as there is against it. Yeah.
It's a strong candidate. Mm. I'd be kind of, if it was the PS4, for example, as great as that system is, I don't feel like the PS4 was as revolutionary as the Switch is or the PS2 was.
Yeah.
It would just sort of be like, it was just a really popular console that sold a lot of units, you know. Whereas the Switch has a real story, I feel.
Well, the PS2, I wouldn't even say was revolutionary, other than the fact that it did the Sony and Xbox thing of stepping up what was already kind of the norm. It was just
DVDs.
DVDs. I suppose.
It was the first DVD player for a lot of people.
It was, but to me, I view the PS2 as like, here's just the. It really is just the PlayStation 2, you know? It's like a sequel console. And if Nintendo, the next step for them might well be just a sort of sequel Switch, like a new model.
Yeah.
But the Switch itself felt like something new. It wasn't just, you know, a kind of a sequel to the Wii or to even to their handhelds. It was kind of its own thing. So that I would say the Switch is more revolutionary than the PS2 was.
Mm.
Or certainly more cutting edge. Maybe you could still argue PS2 is revolutionary.
People are getting furious in the car.
Yeah, you could maybe argue PS2 was revolutionary in the sense that it said, here's like better hardware.
Yeah.
But it didn't do anything like really new and unexpected. It was just, here are your games, but better.
Switch is a fantastic console.
Yeah.
It's well deserving of overtaking an arbitrary number of sales.
Yeah,
I suppose. Do you have any further thoughts?
I was just going to say, I remember what I was going to say. This is a bit of a broad statement, but I do think that the Switch appeals more to female gamers than a lot of the bigger consoles, due to the fact a lot of Switch games aren't online, that kind of energy of like men online, and the way that like a lot of female gamers are treated on online games. And I also think a lot of the games that are on Switch are geared towards the more casual gamer, which does tend to be girl gamers as a whole, because a lot of the time these games are, it's difficult to get into it, and a lot of these adult women who haven't, you know, been into games without the introduction of someone who is really into it might just go for the games that they think are cute and cozy and easy to pick up and easy to play, which is why I do think that Switch is doing so well. I also think the pandemic's helped them a lot.
Yeah.
I think that
Animal Crossing, etc.
Exactly. I mean, I got a Switch during the pandemic, so I could play Animal Crossing. There wasn't that much on the Switch beforehand that I was really interested in, but I got it because of Animal Crossing, and then since then I've played some more games on it. But I do think it's, like you say, it's a revolutionary console in a lot of ways, and it's introduced a whole bunch of more people into games, which I think is great. So, hey, if it does get over that number, good for them.
Good for them. They'll sell a a metric flip ton more of them when the new Pokemon games release next week as well. Yeah. And we'll be covering those on the channel.
Yeah,
yeah, the hits keep coming.
And good also, they didn't stop their stride by releasing a good enough follow-up with the OLED, because what a waste of time that was.
Yeah.
I mean, thank you, Nintendo, for sending us one. But yes, yeah. That was ultimately, I don't know if we have specific sales figures on those, but that was not really what people were hoping for.
Would it count, do you reckon, towards the units included? Because I don't know, because the yes. PlayStation 2 variations included.
Yeah, it definitely would. Nintendo tend to, even when you look up Game Boy sales as well, it often bundles in Advance and Color. So you can find the specific sales numbers for each of those, but usually if you just Google it, it'll be like, here's the total sales of the Game Boy, and they'll just put all of them in. So yeah, definitely variations of the specific console for sure. Will all be in there. Right, it's time for something a little strange, lady and gentleman. Are you ready?
Yes.
Good
for weird news.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It's weird news time. Time for some weird video game news. If you would like to submit weird video game news to us, you can do so on social media. Earlier in the week, we usually do a little post. You can put your comments under that. You can do a little reply on the Twitter there, for as long as Twitter still exists. And
on Facebook too.
Yes, on Facebook, you can do a little comment under there. And if you want to guarantee that you get your name read out, weird news, you can become a podcast producer by going to patreon.com/...
Team Triple Jump.
And support us at a certain tier. Become a podcast producer. We'll shout you out right now.
Nathan.
G.Y. Goliath.
Sean Legg.
Welco.
Nicole Hansen.
This is me. Yeah. Nexus Polaris.
Ellie Nicholas.
Erica Hutchinson.
Melody L. Burnett.
Katie Jarrida Garrett.
And Gabrielle Philippink.
I spent so long reading Nexus Polaris's name and thinking, wow, Peter's probably going to have to take a minute to think about that one. And then, oh, Peter is taking a minute. Oh, it's me.
Nexus Polaris was here last week.
It's me. Yeah, and the week before, I think.
Sometimes
so there we are.
I think maybe I'll just like
shuffle them around.
Nathan's
going
to
be gutted.
Mix it up.
Yeah.
But Nathan wants to go first. Thank you, podcast producers. We appreciate all of you. Really appreciate it. Peter, what's your weird news this week?
I've got weird news that was submitted to us both on Twitter and Facebook. I got the, I think, Facebook submission from Jonathan Wong because it was a good write-up. But RB also sent it to us on Twitter. But this is the Kotaku write-up by Isaiah Colbert or Colbert. Who said, Sega is hiring a Sonic lore master to keep up with all his nonsense. and the subheading is, with great power comes great responsibility to make Sonic M-Preg canon. Which is that male pregnancy?
Yeah, is that like all the fan drawings?
Yeah, I think
stuff.
It's sort of weird art where he's pregnant.
Did you guys see this morning that there was a new Sonic Frontiers trailer? And about 11 seconds into the trailer, Don't Stop Me Now starts playing. And it was like the most just like jarring thing I've ever seen.
No, I didn't know this.
It's cool. It's pretty bad.
Today in job listings that exude a menacing aura, Sega is looking to hire a Sonic lore master to keep track of the Blue Hedgehog's canon and non-canon antics. If you have a degree in the arts and just so happen to be doom scrolling through the job hiring website, LinkedIn, you might have come across a job application from Sega of America for a lore associate manager for the Sonic team. Yes, Sonic has established lore within its video... Yes, Sonic has established lore within its video games, movies, and its low-key, slept-on comic books. Though many might be scratching their heads at the existence of Sonic lore, one doesn't simply go fast without having a pre-established reason to. Over the past 31 years of Sonic's existence, the Hedgehog's lore has involved a plethora of bizarre storylines, like him being cuckolded by Shadow after the Hot Topic Hedgehog stole his then-girlfriend, Sally, and his often-brought-up smooch with a human, which has been burned into everyone's memory. So you can see why Sega is in dire need of someone to keep the Blue Hedgehog's lore straight. As the name would imply, the responsibilities of the lore associate manager include reviewing and verifying story content for accuracy and consistency, as well as brainstorming, script writing, and providing feedback for new Sonic stories and characters. The lore master job listing also happens to coincide with the release of Sonic Frontiers. Don't stop me now. On Xbox, PlayStation, PC, and Switch tomorrow. There's a quote here from the job listing. With both project management and creative duties, you will be immersed in the organizing and shaping of Sonic lore, canon, characters, and universes, helping to bring consistency, connectivity, and creativity, CCC, to all things Sonic across various forms of media, including games, animation, comics, and more, Sega of America wrote in the description.
Could you imagine spending like 8 hours a day just reading and looking at and watching videos about Sonic just to compile a complete version of lore of Sonic the Hedgehog?
I already get...
You'd lose your damn mind.
You would.
I'd get extremely tired just talking about Sonic, having to do it for a
You get talk. A glimpse of him and it is exhausting.
This article is... It does continue, but it's quite good. As of the time of writing, the job listing... The job listed as a full-time mid to senior level position within the company. If you're looking to throw your hat into the game, you'd be in a pool of 371 other Sonic fanatics, 136 of whom are entry-level applicants and 54 qualifying as senior level applicants.
371 people is not that many for a job in the games industry if you really think about it.
Yeah, it leads me to be like, does Sonic actually have a lot of fans, or is it just a few very loud people?
Yeah, maybe.
That's what I'm curious about now.
You know that a lot of people will be qualified for this, though. Not on paper necessarily, but in terms of knowing and caring about the lore.
When will you learn? Your actions have consequences.
Yeah, hire that guy.
You freaking fricks.
Sonic's expansive lore has provided both fans and bystanders alike with a treasure trove of good and lawfully evil phenomena over the past 31 years of the character's existence. On the one hand, you've got hidden gems such as the 1996 Sonic Over, don't know what that is, Machinima's YouTube comedy series Sonic for Hire, and YouTuber Snapcube's hilarious real-time fan dub series. Then there's the dark side of Sonic fan lore. Last year, when the then-President Donald Trump tried to launch on the social media website Getter, off the ground, it was met with leftist Sonic memes, furry vor artwork, and of course, MPreg art. This just goes to show that championing a free speech, independent thought, and rejecting political censorship and cancel culture, Twitter alternative, can lead to hashtags like hashtag SonicFeet, hashtag Sonic is my god, hashtag Sonic loves communism, hashtag Sonic my love, and hashtag Sonic came in my bussy.
No.
Running wild in your virtual town square.
No.
If it were me getting hired as the lore guy for Sonic, I'd make reciting the theme song for the 1999 cartoon Sonic Underground mandatory before the start of any lore meeting, like the Pledge of Allegiance. It's important not to forget your history. Thanks for bearing with, but I really wanted to get to the hashtags there at the
thank
end.
Thank you, thank you.
Thanks, Peter.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much.
You're starting to feel better now, Ashton.
Yeah,
so much.
Illness.
Oh, God.
Yeah, my head is only it's hurting slightly less now. Wow.
We got Matthews.
I have a PC Gamer article that was submitted by Josh Perez at Engineered2D on Twitter. They also sent it to me via my DMs, I believe. Written by Katie Wickens. McDonald's brings us the McCrispy gaming chair to mark the downfall of man. We appear to be standing on the precipice of our de-evolution.
It's all good news today, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just you wait. There's a way out in my news.
Yeah. I thought today would be a normal, boring Monday in the office. I reply to some emails, write a news post, and check through to see if anything's popping off. Only to discover that the de-evolution of man has now officially begun. Our descent into apehood starts now with the new McDonald's gaming chair, aka the McCrispy.
Why is it the McCrispy?
McCrispy is the new chicken sandwich.
So it's just a tie-in to promote that.
Yeah,
they could have called it the McGaming chair.
They could have the McGamey.
The McChair.
No, that's a venison burger.
Yeah. Yum.
No, you've not slipped into an alternative universe where Ronald McDonald is a famous esports athlete. The McCrispy is a real, palpable gaming chair that you can win by entering an official McDonald's Facebook competition, because, of course, it's a Facebook competition. So, obviously, I tried to enter the competition.
Right, yeah.
I can't figure it out. I don't know how to get
it. The competition.
It says, like, click the Learn More button and the video, but I can't find the Learn More button. And everyone in the comments is equally as confused as to how you enter it.
Well, that's it. They've only got one to give away.
Actually, you're wrong. There are only four in the entire world. Which means that's we should be seeing every streamer with questionable revenue streams sporting one of these babies. Though this may yet open up a terrifying opportunity for corporations to follow suit. And then a big gap, I dread to think. The design is a vomit-inducing black and yellow with McCrispy printed slantily across the leather and even a matching lumbar support pillow. Of course, there's a giant M on the back, on the black headrest, sorry, and even the wheels had the McDonald's yellow slapped on them. It comes complete with a fries holder, two dip holders, and a burger heat zone to keep your McCrispy warm.
Two dip holders?
Yeah. Never in my 30 years on this earth have I felt the need to keep my McCrispy warm. Imagine all of those germs fermenting your burger for hours on end. Moreover, never have I, nor anyone I know, expressed a wish to have an heat-emanating gaming chair. Gaming chairs are already warm enough with us sitting in them, working up juicy gaming sweat.
Oh.
Normally, gaming chairs are advertised with the opposite feature. The worst part is that McDonald's is selling the seat on its grease-resistant leather treatment, so no need to worry about spills and stains. Ah, yeah, just gobble it down, folks. No need for table manners. You can forget about all the work you put in cleaning your gaming keyboard. Well, time to wave goodbye to the dignity of the human race. And no, we won't be getting one for testing, so don't expect a review.
Just lying there in like a pile of fries and burger crumbs and I don't need to brush those off. It's grease resistant.
Yeah. That's not how
but
it
at least
works.
Your McCrispy is still warm.
Mm.
What? How does that work? It's just a heat pad.
Yeah.
It sounds like a fire hazard.
Yeah.
So this is the video and it says this is like how you win it and it's only available in the UK. But you can't, it says click the learn more button, but where's the learn more button?
What happens if you click that link?
That URL there.
That's the terms and conditions. Trust me, I've tried.
I've tried
and I can't find it.
Okay, well, if you guys at home can work out how to enter this competition,
please tell me. But we have until the 13th of November to win it.
So it will be too late when this goes out.
And everyone in the comments,
if you win it, send it to us.
Yeah, we'll buy it from
you. My favorite comment is, try doing the competition, but when you click on the links, it gives you terms and conditions. I would like it for my grandchildren, not for me. I'm too old, lol. From Leslie.
Thanks, Leslie.
Leslie, because it's classic a Facebook competition, so that's who they're reaching.
Their target audience.
Yeah.
Got to get Leslie. My chicken chair. No. Mm.
I would like this for my children, not for me. I'm too old.
Lol.
Lol.
My weird news comes courtesy of Bextra, Kestrel, AwesomeFox42, Psy, and many, many others. Thank you so much for this. This is an article on Eurogamer from Liv Nan. And the headline is Oculus founder makes headset which can kill you in celebration of Sword Art Online. Palmer Luckey, founder of Oculus VR and creator of the Oculus Rift, has designed a new VR headset to celebrate the popular light novel and anime series Sword Art Online, which can also kill you. The plot of Sword Art Online revolves around a massive multiplayer online role-playing game in VR, which is played using a headset called the Nerve Gear. A number of players get locked into the game, and the Nerve Gear can't be removed whilst a player is still online. And, spoiler alert, it'll kill a player in real life if they die in the game. Lucky revealed his own version of this headset, named the OQPNVG, in a blog post on the 6th of November. It's really good, isn't it? To coincide with the day the events of Sword Art Online begin. Blah, blah, blah. In his blog, Lucky claimed Sword Art Online led to a huge interest in Oculus as the anime adaptation aired at the same time the Rift went from internet forum curiosity for turbo nerds to siren of the games industry. That's how he refers to the Oculus. combine with Lucky's own interest in the series, and somehow the next logical step was to create a real-life version of the Nerve Gear. The idea of tying your real life to your virtual avatar has always fascinated me, Lucky wrote. According to Lucky, only the threat of serious consequences can make a game feel real to you and every other person in the game. The OQPNVG uses three explosive charge modules mounted to the headset rather than a microwave emitter like its fictional counterpart, so it's crap then. It's not even the same thing.
It's not even real.
When fired, the charges will destroy the brain of the user. Lucky's OQPNVG has a ways to go before it can be considered a true Nerve Gear. It is incapable of supporting a fully interactable VR world like that of Sword Art Online's. However, that is perhaps the least critical issue with it. It then talks about VR being purchased. Here we go. Lucky mentioned the explosive charges that attached to the OQPNVG are usually used in a different project, likely referring to his work on military weapons. Continues. I just want to hit. There's one good line from him. The OQPNVG has not been tested out, thankfully. Lucky admitted he hasn't drummed up the courage to put it on, thanks to a huge variety of failures that could occur and kill the user at the wrong time. Lucky added his design is the first non-fiction example of a VR device that can actually kill the user, to his knowledge, but it may not be the last.
To his knowledge. There'll be one in some basement somewhere that somebody's created. I think you should test it on like a watermelon or something when it's ready. Yeah.
When the watermelon's ready. When it's said its goodbyes.
Yeah.
This is obviously hugely stupid. It's a PR stunt as much as anything
sort of
else.
Art piece.
It's not real. Well, it is real, but it's not going to be a thing that's ever commercially available. But there we are. A headset that can kill you. Mm. That's fun.
The dream.
Yeah, the way out for everyone.
Mm. Let's move on to question.
Michael Milan 3 says, Ayo, Bappers. I've recently been playing the Shadows of Rose DLC for Resident Evil 8. That's Resident Evil Village. While I'm overall enjoying it, I am somewhat disappointed that it reuses so much of the core game. My favorite DLCs in the past have been ones that largely create a new experience. What, in your opinion, makes a great DLC? I must admit, when I saw the initial trailer that they did for the Rose DLC, I thought, oh, you just go back to the village, do you? Okay, fine. So I'm not surprised to hear that. I've not played it, but I'm not surprised to hear that that is the case, that it's mostly just reused content. To me, I agree that it's nice to have a whole new experience, if possible, in a DLC. There are plenty of other DLCs that don't do that are still really good. But the one that always comes to mind for me for a really good DLC was Shivering Isles for Oblivion, where you step through a portal and you end up in the titular Shivering Isles, which were where the Daedric Prince of Madness, what was his name? Sheogorath.
Yes.
Hangs out, and just weird stuff happens all the time. Like, just bizarre things. That's kind of the whole aesthetic of the, not just of the place, but of the DLC itself. So I thought that was a really good DLC. It's like, it's not quite as open as the overworld is, but it's still open world in the sense that you can kind of wander in any direction, and like, you're not going to bump into an invisible wall or a loading screen. You've still got this world to explore. It's just a few more kind of walls and mountains and like thick forests that you can't get through, but really good DLC. So I think personally, I just agree with you, Michael, that having a new experience, a new place to explore, maybe some new characters, maybe playing as characters that you know from a game already, but haven't been able to play as in the core game, you know, that can be fun. So yeah, things like that. Like, for example, on the subject of Resident Evil, although it wasn't DLC, I really liked the Mercenaries mode in some of the, like a few of the recent games have Mercenaries, and you get to play as all kinds of people, either people who featured in the main game or even, you know, like Hunk, I think, was available in Resi 4 Mercenaries, and he wasn't in the game at all. So that's always fun as well. But yeah, just a new experience, a new world is something that I think makes a really good DLC.
Yes, I agree. Also, I think that more of the same isn't bad. I think that if you're exploring the same universe or there's more like story content, then yeah, that's really good. Like the Horizon Frozen Wilds DLC was pretty much more of the same, and it could be completed before the end of the game if you were like playing it for the first time when it came out. And I think that it's just additional universe lore and universe building, which is really cool, and more of the same mechanics but with added kind of like flair. Like there was a whole new set of weapons and armaments in the Horizon Frozen Wilds DLC, and additionally with things like the Dragon Keep DLC for Borderlands 2, it's more of the same characters that you know and love, which is good because you've been playing as them for the entire time and it's still fun to continue playing as them, but in a new environment with new kind of vibe and setting and story, which is great. I think that works really well, but I think that like there's a point where it's like more of the same and it's good, and a point where it's more of the same and it's just more of the same and it's not that interesting, especially when it's a game like Village, which kind of has a final conclusion to that whole arc. I think if you just got more of the same, you're kind of like, well, I've already finished this. And I know that the Shadow Rose DLC is like that there's a reason you're going back to the village. I don't know if you actually even,
I think it's sort of dream sequence, it's a dream or sequence, you know, some kind of hallucination,
I do get, but I also think, you know, that's come to a nice conclusion. We've seen a lot of these areas and we've kind of finished everything now. I do think that that can be hard to kind of come back to and, you know, revisit after that kind of final conclusion. So I do think when it's a game that is, especially one that's kind of a sequel, like a sequel to 7, I think it can be hard to add DLC on. But like I say, more of the same isn't always a bad thing, but it has to kind of add something to the universe or the story itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that as well. Not necessarily a bad thing, but I can understand why that would be disappointing. To just be going back and traipsing around the same environments, especially if there's not enough of a spin put on the original game or the original experience. For me, the undisputed king of DLC is Borderlands 2. Jesus, what's going on in there? Is it the boys? Are they gone in?
Yeah.
Do you want to do the dad thing and knock on the wall? Just give them a little hammer on the wall.
The snacks may have arrived. You've got to be more aggressive.
It's all so padded.
What, you want me to pound?
Yeah, as if it's a noisy next door neighbour.
Oh,
good.
Goodness, that made me feel uncomfortable.
Yeah,
how did you feel about that?
I got 2 pounds in. I was going to do 3, and I was like, no, that's enough.
No, actually, only 2 quid.
Yeah, I feel comfy now.
Borderlands 2 for me is the DLC. But to be clear, for people to understand geographically where we are, the kitchen for this office is on the other side of this wall.
Thin wall.
So sometimes when they go in there, they make a flip ton of noise because they're having a tea break or
Brew crew. But actually,
as you pointed out, they may well be. There's a big shop coming in today.
Yeah, so I'm ungratefully banging on the wall. It might even be big boss man Adam Pacitti on the other side bringing in the food he's paid for.
He should know better. He knows how annoying it is.
Keep it down, Dad.
While you can hear them all in the kitchen. Yeah. Anyway, Borderlands 2 DLC was unbelievable because they had 3 or 4 big expansive DLCs that were all included as part of a season pass.
Mm-hmm.
They had, 2 DLC characters?
Like
brand new characters to play as? There's Gage and Krieg.
Yeah. Was it 3? Or was the Ice Lady in the first one?
I think she was in the pre-sequel.
The pre-sequel.
Yeah. So 2 brand new characters with their own skill trees and all that kind of stuff. These areas were big maps that had sub areas. They had a main story that ran through it and lots of little side quests and things, new guns, new gear, new loot, all the kind of stuff you would expect from the main game, but in sort of microcosm. And they also had released several sort of much smaller holiday themed pieces that again took place in their own area. There's a Halloween one. There's one we've spoken about before on the channel and I've streamed, which is Marcus Saves Mercenary Day yeah. which is a Christmas-themed one.
There's a Valentine's Day one.
There's a Valentine's Day one. I thought that stuff was really good, introducing new characters, new areas, new quests, all that kind of stuff. But I do agree that I think DLC is at its strongest. And if we're talking DLC that's not cosmetic or like a WWE game DLC where you get more attribute points for your character or currencies or whatever, then it's got to be a new area with new stuff, and that is what I want out of a DLC most of the time.
Battlefront 2 did that well. It did a lot of things wrong, but it would, they would just say, hey, here's like a whole new planet and like all the characters like who fought on this planet in this film, and just actual new stuff.
It's good. It's a good flip right there. It's time to move on to something a little bit large. Some people call it the big discussion.
Big discussion, huh?
It's big discussion time. Time for the big video game discussion that this week comes courtesy of David Lever, who says, heyo, BP and A.
No.
PB and A.
Yeah.
BP and P.
PB and A.
J.
PB and J.
Gotcha. Yes, I understand. Thank you, David. I've noticed a trend recently of people complaining whenever a hyped game is well reviewed, The Last of Us 2, God of War Ragnarok, Breath of the Wild, that it's only reviewing well because it has to be good due to the franchise's reputation or the hype itself, i.e. cognitive dissonance. What do you think about these complaints? Do you think there's any truth to it, or that it's a load of twaddle, or somewhere in between? Thank you. P.S. Personally, I think it's overly negative splot. Subjective opinions exist, and sometimes stuff is reviewed well because it's good.
Thanks, David.
Thank you, David.
Thanks, David. I'm fortunate not to have seen this kind of rhetoric, really. I don't think I've ever really seen anyone say it's reviewed well because it has to be good. Have you guys seen this around?
So I have a little suspicion that this question came from a discussion that was had in our Discord. Which was a little bit similar to this kind of vibe of, well, if one of the big studios is really pushing it, then a lot of the reviewers will be more inclined to review
it
well,
a positive review,
due to the fact that, like, you know, these things might benefit them in the long run kind of situation, which I do think does tend to happen.
If you get down to that nuance of it, I've seen that more, the argument that, well, because it's an important game from an important company, people feel inclined to review it well for their own benefit. Like, you know, I want this publisher to like me, or, you know, that kind of thing. And it's not very professional to do that, or it's not very good for your own consumers or your readers or your viewers.
You see some channels that are like always at the top of the IGN thing where other people would give it like 60%, and they're like,
there's
100% best game ever.
One in particular that is always featured on all of the marketing materials because they give every game a 10 out of 10. All the big games get a 10 out of 10 from them. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying for a second that that's the case across the board.
No.
But that bias does exist. That is true. That is a true thing.
But that exists, and I'm more aware of that than perhaps some more, and maybe that is what David is basically saying. But if David is more saying that, like, some people think, well, we ought to review this well because this game should do well.
I've heard it about Mario. I've heard the strength of Mario's IP often gives Mario games a more favorable score if they weren't a Mario game.
Yeah.
Which I can understand the argument of, but at the end of the day, the vast majority of Mario games are very good.
Yeah. But ultimately, it doesn't really matter exactly what we're talking about here in terms of, you know, the broader question could be, if people review games well, there can often be backlash for it from disgruntled gamers, often from other platforms, but not necessarily. And that is always very frustrating. And my mind immediately goes to The Last of Us, for example. And, you know, there were reasons why, not justified reasons, but there were reasons why people got cross at The Last of Us Part 2, and they then found it frustrating that it was actually, you know, it was I don't want to say an objectively good game, but it was seemingly a very good game. And because it didn't kind of tick the boxes that they wanted it to tick, or it ticked boxes that they didn't want it to tick, they got frustrated with that. And then you end up with review bombing as well. I guess we're sort of talking a bit more about critical reviews in this question. But it's difficult to see a negative reaction from gamers when they see a game doing well just because they don't like it, ultimately. That, and there's no real justification for that kind of behavior. David puts it as well as anyone, saying subjective opinions exist and sometimes stuff is reviewed well because it's good. And I'd like to think that for the most part, actual critical, you know, the outlets that you're thinking of that come to mind when you talk about game reviews, generally probably review games based on their actual experience with the game and not because they're trying to kind of feather any nests or, you know, please people from PR or publishers. I've seen less of this in the way that David specifies, and I hope I don't really see any more of that, to be honest. That just sounds annoying to see.
I do think that there is a little bit of a like pre-release bias that a lot of us have, that we like, that even in casual conversation we'll be like, well, the God of War Ragnarok's coming out soon, it's gonna be good, like it's gonna be good.
Yeah,
same way we did with like Horizon Forbidden West and Elden Ring. It's, oh well, it's gonna be good because it has to be good because of who's making it. And I do think there is a sort of bias that a lot of people have as well, it's being made by said company and they have a good history, it's going to be a good game. And I do think that maybe sometimes reviews can be gone into with a more positive idea of what's going to happen in the game than other companies. Like, I think the next CD Projekt Red game will be gone into with a much harsher magnifying glass because of Cyberpunk than, say, the next God of War was going into, because the first God of War game was really good. Mm-hmm. So I do think that there is a kind of reputational bias that is potentially given to some games. However, I also think that it would be silly to assume that because they've got good reviews from such a like an amount of critics, that it's just false. Because at the end of the day, there's going to be people who are not going to like it. And to assume that what is potentially 10 to 15 critical reviewers have said it's a good game just because it's going to be a good game because it's God of War, I do think that that's like a kind of an outlandish and really reaching for a point there. Because you can hardly get 5 reviewers into a room and tell them to review the same game at the same time, let alone, you know, get them to all give the same review and say the same things. So I do think it's difficult to say that it's not real because they're just going to give it a good result because it's a good game. But I do think that there is still a reputational bias that you do go into a game looking for the positives or looking for the negatives, depending on the franchise or the company's reputation. Mm-hmm. So I do think that's true, but I also don't think that getting a bunch of good reviews means that it's actually not a good game and they're just like false reviews.
Well, let's not forget that a review is not just a score at the end. I know like that's kind of what your mind goes to. Oh, it's scored, it's averaging 90, whatever. But a review, they back up what they're saying. They're not just saying this is a 95% game, full stop. They say it's a 95% game because here are all the gameplay things I like. Oh, I didn't like this bit. This was an annoying quest and blah, blah, blah. You know, like, it's justified. They give justification for the scores that are reached at the end in their conclusion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do big franchises get preferential treatment when it comes to review time, do you think?
I think they certainly get... They get reviewed more. Because it's a big franchise, then
people are going to click on the review.
Yeah, people are more get more clicks on this actual review.
Would you say that they get given more of a benefit of the doubt, though? Is that as to Ashton was saying?
I don't think necessarily they get the benefit of the doubt when it comes to. I think it's in a way it's easier to pick apart a. It's like positive and negative marking. I think if you're dealing with like a small, you know, like an indie game or something, it really needs to like do the work to raise your score. So you maybe go in at 50% and then it has to like do the work to show you why it's a 70, 80, 90% game. Whereas I think something like God of War, people might go in thinking this is probably going to be an 80, 90, 100% game. But then I think it's quite easy at that point to negatively mark stuff. And if you encounter a load of glitches, we've seen it with, you know, for example, I hear from Ashton, you've had a bit of disappointment in the Borderlands recently.
Yeah, there's been some tales.
So you went into that game presumably expecting it to be good
at
because you enjoyed
good.
Yeah. And then
it wasn't.
You encountered reasons why it wasn't.
And
that brought down
identify that quite clearly.
Yeah, so I think that's the way it works. I think you maybe with those like more mainstream games, you go in like with the expectations and then they get chipped away.
Yeah.
Whereas with a lower an indie game or something, it has to like be built up. Maybe
I think mainstream games have to do more to disappoint people than if it was a new franchise. Say for example, if Dead Space 3 wasn't rubbish and it had been a long old break and we weren't getting a Dead Space remake, we were getting a Dead Space 4 and the reputation was there, let's say Dead Space 4 was releasing Dead Space 4 is releasing 2 years after Dead Space 3, and Dead Space 3 was really good.
And it was good, okay.
And people are excited for Dead Space 4. Dead Space 4 would have to do more wrong than the Callisto Protocol would to be marked worse.
Yeah.
So the Callisto Protocol has more of an uphill battle to be reviewed as well as Dead Space 4, even if Dead Space 4 was exactly as good as the Callisto Protocol.
Yeah.
I feel like there would be, but I don't think it would be that different. And also, ultimately, it's semantics and the scores don't really matter, but they are a useful measuring stick of whether or not, ultimately, you would like to play a game.
Especially if you find a reviewer who often gives the same
agrees
kind of, yeah.
with your opinions. Exactly. But if this bias does exist, and I think we're agreed that it kind of does, but not to the extent where it really causes any issues, I feel that certain games are pigeonholed for similar reasons, like Horizon Zero Dawn and Horizon Forbidden West. I would say those games are 9 out of 10 games. Neither of them has ever got a score like that. And I feel like because of the genre of game that they are, they will never escape that mid-80s range. Whether or not that's fair doesn't really matter because I know I like those games and an 85 is a really good score anyway. But I do feel like some games really do just get stuffed into a certain category and I don't know what Horizon could ever do to break out of that, you know, and break into a 90% because people have decided that is where Horizon goes on the review scale.
And I guess it's partly an element of there being a crowded market when you talk about Horizon as an example, that genre, there are so many good games, 80 plus kind of scores in the, you know, you look like God of War, for example, your third person action adventure games, even if you want to limit it down to on Sony consoles, there are so many of those and have been so many really good ones over the past few generations that maybe you have to do a lot more to stand out within that genre. Whereas if someone brought out a new football game and there's a couple of main players, if you'll pardon the pun, in that world, but not so many, and if someone brought out a really good football game, it might maybe find it easier to reach the top of that league than the third person action adventure.
What does FIFA have to do to get a 95?
Well, yeah,
what does that even mean?
Yeah,
just works,
ultimately
didn't it?
Yeah.
Just works.
What does it even mean at that point?
Call of Duty as well is another one, I think, where it's always going to basically score the same, unless it does something really bad.
I also think that games reviews tend to depend on what's coming out either side of it. Like with Horizon, with Elden Ring, literally like 5 or 6 days after Horizon Forbidden West came out. I'm not saying that it would have got better scores, but I am saying that potentially they do influence one another. If you've got a reviewer that's gone from playing Elden Ring to then playing Horizon or vice versa, Elden Ring's out. I do think it's going to affect either way, whichever way around.
Absolutely, especially if it has any common ground at all, i.e. being an open world RPG. Like that, there is going to be an impact there. We've all heard for quite a while, and I think it was said a lot more in that big old break where we heard nothing about Ragnarok, that the consensus generally was, hey, it's probably just going to be more God of War 2018. And that's great. We could do with that. It's probably not going to get the same score in it, but it'll still be really good. And then everyone saw the trailer and like they're using the same boat animations.
Yeah.
It's just going to be the same game. The fact that it got a score like this is really exciting. Mm. And I don't know why anyone would be upset by that. Why wouldn't you want this game to be this good or to believe that this game is this good, especially as it's now out and everyone can play it? Not everyone's going to like it. As we've spoken about ad nauseum in regards to The Last of Us Part 2, if you don't like it, that's totally understandable. It's a bleak, depressing video game. If you hate it because of its themes, like having a trans character, that's a completely different argument. Those are two sides of a coin there. Two completely different discussions. God of War is reviewing incredibly highly when for the longest time we all thought it was just going to be more of the same.
Yeah.
And the fact that it has reviewed so highly is something to be celebrated. But it is ultimately unimportant because it's a review score and you'll like it or you won't. But there's a good chance that you will because it's reviewed so well.
That's the thing as well. It's worth reminding, this is basically the point you're making, but it's worth reminding you, listener, viewer, that we're talking right now on before the game has basically reached the players. So people are getting mad at specifically critical reviews without having yet played it themselves. Mm. So you're right to say that at least from that point of view, when you've not even played it yet, you should be excited that it scored really well. That's great. If you then eventually, you know, get your hands on it and play it and think, no, this is what I thought it would be. It's just more of the original game. It shouldn't really have scored any higher. Then you're entitled to sort of have that opinion and say, well, maybe, and to ask the question, why has this scored so highly when, in my opinion, it's no better than the first? But when you've not even got your hands on it yet, all you really ought to do is be intrigued, if nothing else, mm-hmm. and think, okay, why has this scored so highly? Maybe because it's a better game.
It's a Metacritic 94, but is it a David Lever 80?
Mm. Mm.
Who knows?
Yeah.
You just have to play it and find out.
I know that we gamers are starting to /are a jaded bunch. But, you know, sometimes it's okay to be excited about things.
Yeah, just let people like things.
I always get excited and then sometimes when I get let down, it hurts more. But sometimes it's okay to be excited because it's going to be good and it's worth it.
Just let people like things.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Hey, guy.
But also, just sort of in a broad sense, be kind to people on the internet because there was actually an inverse story that's come out of this this situation where a reviewer for IGN Korea, I don't know if you saw this, gave the game a 6. And has been receiving death threats.
Cool.
So,
of course.
Cool.
So,
normal
should we? Yes. Yeah, should we just chill? There's an article an article from Push Square linked in the link dump if you want to read up a bit more about that. Mm. But obviously, that behavior is unacceptable. I actually hadn't heard anything about this particular instance with God of War, people criticizing the review score, but just because it has to get that review score. But certainly, we do this dance every time a big game comes out. Someone reviews it too highly, someone reviews it too lowly. Too low. And there are always outliers because they are subjective opinions at the end of the day. And then people go after them. And that's just grow up.
Why does it matter? That's why averages exist.
Why does it matter? Exactly. It's an average at the end of the day. This is the average of all the reviews on the internet.
Why get upset by the one person who reviews it 101% and the other person who gives it 33% when the average score is, 80, 90, whatever it is, whatever game we're talking about. Just
God of War's Metascore is really high. And I imagine a lot of people who are listening to this podcast will already be diving in and finding out for themselves if it's worth it or not. But as always, review scores are there just as a guiding presence. And if you take them too seriously, then, it is what it is. You can disagree with them and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, make sure you let us know in the comments below what you think about everything we've discussed today. We'd love to hear from you. And Peter's going to tell you where on the internet you can find us.
YouTube.com and twitch.tv/TeamTripleJump for all of our videos and our live streams. When we're streaming on both YouTube and Twitch, we're modded by Lord Brotovich, Trailing Badger, and Mr. Black. If you've got Amazon Prime, part of that bundle that you're already paying for includes a Twitch sub, so you can spend that on us at no extra cost, and that will be great for everyone involved. Twitter.com and Facebook.com/TeamTripleJump. You can go to both of those for video and live stream announcements, legacy video content, questions about the podcast and so on and so forth, all sorts of things. Highlights of the week as well from Twitch. TikTok.com/@TeamTripleJump for our TikTok. We will put some TikToks on it eventually.
There's someone up this week.
Great. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Not like actual TikToks, but like
clips. Yeah, we've been posting
clips and stuff.
Those are good.
Them.
Yeah, but we'll do some more talks at some point. Mm. You know, some memes and things. Mm. Parv, you're doing more TikToks on your TikTok. Patreon.com/TeamTripleJump for lots of different tiered rewards. You can go and look at them all and choose which ones you'd like, and they give us the money. Thanks.
We have a website, triplej.map, it spells jump. It's very clever. If you want to join our Discord, it's triplej.map/Discord. Chat with our wonderful community over there. On Discord, we're modded by Jack, Joe, Tori, and Holowise. And if they do something, pretty well do it, all right?
Do it,
if you want to listen to the podcast in its audio forms, why not go to triplej.map/podcast or catch up on some more live stream pods by going to triplej.map/vods. If you want to book a cameo from us three or James Jenkins, why not go to triplej.map/cameo? Christmas is coming up soon.
Christmas is coming up soon.
A wonderful Merry Christmas.
And a Happy New
Year. And a Happy New Year.
Glass extra.
Yeah. Or maybe a Happy Hanukkah, if you fancy. Mm. And if you want to buy some sick and cool merch, go to triplejumpshop.com. Make sure you're following at triplejumpshop on Twitter for the latest merch announcements.
Peter checked his hoodie to see if there was something underneath.
I checked underneath my hoodie to see if there
was.
He's naked under there.
It's just a blue t-shirt.
Just shirt today. Yeah. I'm wearing
He's
one.
Naked under there. We all are.
Why not follow Peter and Ashton on Instagram and Twitter at @ThatPeterAustin and at @ScrambledAshton and myself just on Twitter at @ConfusedUnderscoreDude. We do lists every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Streams every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Worst games is fortnightly. Friday for patrons of a certain tier. Sunday for everyone else.
Blaze it.
What? Thank you. Sorry, I didn't. I skipped over it, didn't I? Oh. Streams every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I'm taking a small break from streaming. Solo streams are Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And the joint stream is... What did I say?
Yeah, you're right.
Joint stream is Thursday.
On YouTube.
Thursday being the joint stream. Blaze it.
On YouTube. Mm. That really... The subtraction of the Friday
it's
has
really thrown you off.
Just ruined the whole flow, hasn't it? The podcast is every Saturday. And we do shows all the bloody time. So come and check them out. Why not leave a 5-star review on your platform of choice? It helps something to do with Al Gore's rhythms. It's free and it takes just a moment. So please consider doing that. Merch, it says here. Merch.
I just haven't taken it. They're still available. You can buy the Ashton pins or there's this Legs top and new merch coming soon.
Yes. Fingers Christmas crossed. Drop, hopefully.
Yeah, we need to message our boy about that. Actually.
Yeah, we do it.
And there's 1 week left. On the Tatterpeel, this is your, well, actually 6 days.
18th of November, it's the last chance.
Do we make work for Kieran by saying address on screen address or do we just say screen. Address available
address
on the
address
channel?
Address available on social media. So Kieran, if you are watching through the edit, I don't blame him if he doesn't. He doesn't need to.
No.
Then address really on screen. If not, address elsewhere. Mm. It's findable. Thank you to everyone who sent
Tat in. Don't forget, there is a 1 week grace period. So if it's not going to arrive by the 18th of November,
much.
No worries. There's going to be a week before we open it anyway.
Yes. Then we will film. And if we do get anything after that date, it won't be on camera, but we will contact you if there's contact information inside. Thank you.
Yeah.
So there we go. Worst games ever is this week, Peter.
It is Mary, Kate and Ashley Crush Course. I've just watched it, the first draft. It's the final draft because James Jenkins is a one draft boy now. He's always doing single drafts. It's good. I enjoyed it. More Mary, Kate and Ashley. You might think more of that. Don't want to see that. You're wrong. You do.
You do. Why would anyone think that? They're incredible. They're the twins of our generation.
Mm.
Also, finally, of course, the Quipscope for God of War Ragnarok that is available on the channel. Go and watch those / listen to that. Blah, blah, blah. Ashton, sponsor, please.
I want a Ragnarok and roll right now. And party every day.
Aye.
On a God of War Ragnarok
roll
right now.
All night.
I don't know the line.
And have a really good time. Thank you for watching, everybody. We will see you next week. Look after yourselves.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.